Ladies and gentlemen, it's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue, the other guy on The Other Podcast, and through the magic of the internet, not sitting here with us.
I hope you can actually hear me.
Having
some issues here on my earphones, and I'm not sure what they are. So,
well, we can hear you.
Can you boost
Diana.
Her volume a little bit, maybe?
No, that's that her level is automatically gain ridden by the software at Podbean.
Oh, okay. The software is solving our problems, whatever it is. Maybe it's the headphones. I don't know.
Yeah.
Jack my headphone volume a little bit, yeah, maybe. Doing the technical stuff. Folks, yeah. You can read my good friend John Hogue's work at his blog, Hoguewash.com.
Meanwhile, Stacy over there blogs at theothermccain.com and also at other fine spots around the interwebs. I'll let him worry about telling you those. We've got Diana.
Yeah. Any news down there in Valdosta, Diana?
The best news is it's hot and humid, but it's going to cool off and rain. That's good news, by the way.
Well, we're supposed to have thunderstorms up here tomorrow and with highs in the 60s. So.
Yeah, us too. Probably a little later. Earlier?
Y'all got hit by Georgia got hit by tornadoes this past week, although I think that was north of you.
It was, but we're hearing a lot about it. We're gonna try and do some. There are a bunch of people getting together trying to organize help, relief, the usual. People, neighbors helping neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I see in the local Valdosta news that you had two people killed and another seriously injured in a wreck on I-75 early Thursday morning.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, somebody plowed into a tractor trailer truck or something.
You know, when I heard the story, it sounded, let's be really honest. I joke about the South Georgia Carnival of Bad Driving, but it sounded like some brainless git decided to cut directly in front of a semi, causing the semi to hit its brakes, and that's never a positive thing. Mm. And it looks like there was what amounted to a jackknifing, which took out two cars at least.
Yeah.
That's what I was reading initially. I'm not sure if that's what the investigation showed.
Well, speaking of jackknifing, there is a picture running around the interwebs today of a semi on a highway in China that has jackknifed, and it has an evergreen trailer.
We've had some problems in the Suez Canal. But more Georgia news, by the way. I just happened to, since I'm looking at it, all adults in Georgia older than 16 are now eligible for the COVID vaccine.
Meanwhile, yep. I get my second shot on the 15th of April.
Okay, so you're about to be free from risk. You know, I've had friends, several friends who are now vaccinated, and I saw a poll this past week that in which more than 70% of people 65 and older now mm-hmm. say that they have been vaccinated against COVID, so that the most vulnerable population.
Well, I'm 73, okay? And even though I have been vaccinated at least halfway, and so I'm at something like 80% immunity. But the point is let's say I didn't get vaccinated. Statistically, just because I'm 73 years old, if you look at my life expectancy, I have roughly a 50 times greater chance of just dying than catching COVID and dying. So, you know, it's not, I don't view it as a lot of risk mitigation. I view it as the ability to throw my mask away earlier.
Yes.
Some folks.
Well, you know, this past week, we had a lot of people in the media panic over video of spring break crowds down in Florida. You know, Florida has been, you know, mask free for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, you wrote about spring break, but before I turn you loose on that story, I was reading it again before we went on, and it reminded me that I never went on vacation for spring break the entire time I was in college. I did go at Christmas break one year with a friend who lived in Fort Lauderdale. Uh-huh. So I did do that, but it because I was working in radio,
right?
And there were a lot of other people who I was associated with through the campus radio station at Vanderbilt who had jobs around various radio stations in Nashville. I would fill in for them during spring break, you know, and make an extra week's pay. So I, you know, it's my Scottish heritage. I couldn't turn down the money, but it was interesting. One year I wound up with 8 W-2 forms.
Oh,
because of all the stuff. However, the fact that I was the evening news guy at WLAC, the evening that Martin Luther King was shot, was the fact that that was spring break, and the guy who normally would have been doing that was on vacation, and so I came down from FM, and I was working his slot on the AM station.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, meanwhile, back in Florida.
Yeah, last Saturday, right after we got off the air, or subsequently, I noticed that Miami Beach had imposed a 8 p.m. curfew because of spring break mayhem, in which the Miami Beach mayor told the crowds, if you're coming here to go crazy, go somewhere else. And I had seen some video of the scene on South Beach that they were talking about, with these crowds dancing in the streets. And I wondered if anyone noticed the demographic of who was partying there, because I was like, wait a minute, this is not Annette Funicello, you know, Connie Francis singing Where the Boys Are.
That's the other coast.
Yeah, yeah. This is not the spring break that you might have thought we were talking about. But, you know, there was a lot of, like I said, the national media was going crazy. Ooh, this is, you know, this is a super spreader, blah, 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 because they hate Florida because, A, Florida went for Trump two elections in a row, and the
not only that, remember Hanging Chad?
Yeah, the Republican governor of Florida has had this more or less wide open policy down there, where basically what they have focused on is there. It's kind of the exact opposite of what Killer Cuomo has done in New York, namely. Under Ron DeSantis down in Florida, what they've done is concentrated on protecting the elderly population while not locking down businesses and so on and so forth. And so a lot of people are just, they freak out, you know, if you're living in New York City or San Francisco or one of these lockdown, and, you know, Chicago, wherever, one of these lockdown mask mandatory places, and you turn on the TV and see people no mask, no social distancing, just having a good time down in Florida, the people are freaking out. But
and healthier than your community.
Yeah, they're young people, okay? Young people are really not that much at risk. But anyways, after weeks of uninhibited partying on South Beach, he says, reading from the Miami Herald, by spring breakers, police turned away throngs of people, many of them black, from world-famous Ocean Drive with a SWAT truck, pepper balls, and sound cannons. The tactics were intended to enforce an 8 p.m. curfew announced only hours earlier on Saturday to rid the city of what police and politicians have described as unruly and sometimes violent late-night crowds. But the use of force to clear out people of color from South Beach alarmed some black leaders. They quote a Stephen Hunter Johnson, chairman of Miami-Dade's Black Affairs Advisory Committee. I was very disappointed, Johnson said. I think when they're young black people on South Beach, the response is, oh my God, we have to do something. And it goes on to say, another member of the Black Affairs Advisory Committee, oh my God, said that we are definitely fighting an undertone of racism, end quote, among the city's largely white resident base, some of whom have called black spring breakers thugs or animals on social media. Yeah, so, well, in other words, they're monitoring. They're now monitoring people's what?
Have you seen some of those videos?
Well, I did post, if you will go to my website, theothermccain.com, I posted a video that was tweeted out by Ian Chong, showing some of the scenes on Miami Beach, and it's it's not probably good representation for the community. I'll just put it that way.
Well, here's the thing: what would those leaders be saying if some of those girls got raped, or some of the young men fueled by alcohol and too much excitement started fighting? I mean,
or shooting each other.
Well, let's hope they don't shoot each other, because then we have a whole gun control argument. But seriously, if some of those girls have been raped because of this out of control atmosphere, or some of these guys had beaten each other bloody, what would they be saying then? I mean, it's not boys will be boys at that point, is it? Or at least I hope not.
Well,
You know, but the whole thing has to do with the rowdiness of youth. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, we partied pretty well when I was 50 some odd years ago when I was in school. So, but there was a level of decorum, at least about what was done in public and what was going on the beach. On the other hand, you know, I began to see that kind of approach to the interaction between the sexes change. And you blogged about that, a kind of a retro.
It just so happened over the weekend. Last weekend when, my grandsons were with me, in order for them to watch Veggie Tales on our we've got the what do you call that, Fire Stick, Amazon Fire Stick, anyways, and And one of the things we've got on there is you can get free movies from IMDb, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That come, you know, they've got advertisements in them, but it's the full uncut movies. And so we were watching VeggieTales, if you're familiar with what VeggieTales is.
Where is my hairbrush? Unfair.
Oh, where is my hairbrush? But yes, VeggieTales, you know that you're a homeschooling parent when you can sing the entire canon of VeggieTales songs because it's very popular with Christian homeschooling
My
parents.
Son was just a little bit too old for them.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, the VeggieTales. So I was watching that with my grandsons, while, you know, they were, after they left, I was kind of like looking at, you know, oh, they've got movies on IMDb. And I watched a documentary, you know, I watched some old movies. But then I saw that they had Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now if you're my age, and I'm 61, there is... As I said on my blog, and the post is titled "An R-Rated Time Capsule from 1982," the two things most people remember about Fast Times is Ridgemont High, is Sean Penn as the dopehead surfer Jeff Spicoli. Yeah, man, let's party. You know, right? Okay, and the famous topless fantasy scene with Phoebe Cates. And if I have to describe that to you, it is set to the tune of The Cars Moving in Stereo. Hi, Brad. You know, I've always thought cute.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that scene, that was worth the price of the, you know, admission alone, and you know, the fact that you know, it was rated R, the movie was rated R, mm-hmm. So you
probably wouldn't be now.
Well, legally, yes, you would. Had to be an adult unless you had an adult to take you in, but I think all teenagers got in to see that, and I think a lot of what I've had, you know, they bought tickets for a PG-rated movie and then just snuck in to see Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but it was. for my generation, this was kind of canonical, mm-hmm. This
you
movie.
You referenced it often enough.
Well, yeah, and by the way, I talk a lot about, it, you know, the background,
mm-hmm.
In this post. I talk about the background of what is portrayed in there. And by the way, the female protagonist in the movie, mm-hmm. who is played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And mm-hmm. I learn things every day. Okay. I am someone, you know, curiosity killed the cat. But if you're a journalist, you have to risk death. Okay. I mean, I think one of the things as a journalist is that this need to know. I just can't stand an unanswered question. And you've seen me go off on these details.
Well, I was watching you just before we went on.
Yeah, yeah. I was
running, trying to run down an idea of a character in a story.
Yeah, I saw a headline right before.
Meanwhile, you were going to talk about Jennifer.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. Her character is named Stacy. Okay.
Yes.
Now, my middle name, and you know, I go by Robert Stacy McCain. Okay, but my friends know me as Stacy, and always, and you know, that's a girl's name. You know, there's a playground taunt that I had to deal with. Well, actually, no. The reason my middle name is Stacy is that I am named after this is my family doctor, the pediatrician, Dr. Stacy Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you go. But so I'm sure,
no, hang on. I'm gonna go down this while we're down the rabbit hole. I'm going to finish this story and explain that Dr. Stacy Burnett was a man like, you think of the actor Stacy Keach or the Falcons wide receiver Stacy Bailey. Mm-hmm. Okay, Stacy was a surname. It's an English surname. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it got transposed into a first name, right, as the matronymic. Okay, in other words, my older brother, right, is named William Kirby McCain, Kirby being my mother's maiden name, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And my brother's middle name is Barker, my mother's maiden
name. Your mother is a Barker. And so the name Stacy came in like that. But what happened is during the 1950s, all names ending with Y, okay, or IE, got turned into girls' name. For instance, much, Leslie. Yes.
Well, they already had Mary.
Well, but Leslie, Ashley, names that used to be men's names. Yep. If they ended with a Y, including Tracy and Stacy, that's how. So anyways, but Stacy is the character's name. And she's only 15 years old.
I know. That's a problem in that.
Yeah, well, this is problematic in
The actress was 20 at the time.
Well, but I didn't know this. Speaking of trivia, Jennifer Jason Leigh is the daughter of Vic Morrow.
Yes,
she is. And I'm like, holy cow, why did I not know that? Because when I was a kid, we watched the TV drama Combat, in which Vic Morrow played the sergeant, the grizzled kind of, hard, the cynical and, sergeant there who always carried a Tommy gun. That's why we liked him, because he carried a Tommy gun. And but Vic Morrow, but that's his daughter, Jennifer Jason Leigh. Mm-hmm. And the attitudes that are conveyed in that, particularly this idea that the 15-year-old girl is ready to lose her virginity and the guy she chooses is 26, right? She tells him she's 19.
A baby if you're 26. I'm kind of curious about this guy. Anyway,
but this is a movie plot, but back in the day, and I lived through this. This was my youth. But I remember girls who were 15, right? Drinking age in Georgia was 18 at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember girls who were sophomores in high school, maybe some of them even freshmen, who were on, their fake ID or their sister's ID, were going out clubbing down at Underground Atlanta at the Mad Hatter discos and places like that. And man, those bouncers didn't want to turn. If they were, good looking girls, and hey, they down south, the girls grow up a little faster. It's the climate, I'm told. But this casual attitude toward, underage sex, as we would think of it now, and we would now be, prosecuting these people as pedophiles. But this was the attitude at the time.
Yeah, but see,
Woody Allen could not be reached for comment.
In the 60s, 15 years before this, when I'm going through this, most of the girls weren't on the pill yet. There wasn't birth control. There were consequences.
God,
and what? There are consequences now to the changes that we've seen in society because of the attitude with, well, it's just sex.
Mm-hmm.
I linked to a tweet that Mark Perry had out. The medium household incomes and share of births to unwed mothers by race.
Oh, yeah.
2019.
Uh-oh. It's gone.
Very gone.
Well, really, because I pulled it up on my machine just a second ago.
How?
Really?
How?
Maybe 15 minutes ago, just before we went on the air. But basically, Asian median household incomes around 90,000, pushing 100,000, and they have something like 12% of unwed births. And then whites, it's just under 80,000 and something like just under 30% unwed births, and Hispanics.
But, you know, I saw that.
About 60,000. And then blacks, just over 40,000. And almost 70% of their births are to unwed mothers.
You know, what I'd like to do is actually see if we could break out. And I know there's a way to do it. I simply don't know how. To break out the demographic of the two-parent intact black family and see what their median income is. Because I'm willing to bet it's a lot.
Well,
it is much higher. But
then why are we emphasizing that? I really would like to point that out to young people rather than trying to tell them, oh my God, you're going to be in misery. And they're like, you know, hey, I grew up like this. Why would I do anything different?
Right. Well, but the point is that when I was growing up, the percentage of black births was much, much lower for unwed mothers. It was still higher than whites, still higher than Hispanics, but it was much lower, probably lower than what it is for whites today. And the point is that if what your comment about intact two-parent families, that's the difference that you see between the Asian households and white households and some other minority groups. But there are also a group of whites where the women have just given up on husbands. And that's where you're seeing this rise
out of wedlock births.
Well, by the way, one of the best books on this problem was by Barbara Defoe Whitehead. Mm-hmm. It's called The Divorce Culture.
Yep.
Okay, if you are listening to this podcast, pause it. You know, if you're listening to it on replay, pause this, go get a pen and write this down. The Divorce Culture by Barbara Defoe Whitehead, which originated with a long article that ran in the Atlantic Monthly called Dan Quayle Was Right.
Yeah, or Charles Murray's book, Falling Behind.
Right.
Falling Apart.
Right. Falling Apart. Barbara Defoe Whitehead talks about the cultural changes that developed the attitudes toward love, sex, and marriage, and how, and family, that took place over the course of roughly 30 to 40 years that gave rise to this this problem of unwed motherhood. And part of the problem is that what we're talking about is that structure, okay? In other words, children do best in with a consistent level of adult supervision and a household that is stable, peaceful, okay? What is characteristic of the unwed mother home is
chaotic space.
Chaos, exactly, is the exact word, is the chaos that characterizes.
Go ahead. Here's the thing. This is something that I've noted from my work in scouting, because we've gotten in a lot of single parent kids, mostly with women for their parents. And I've seen that these women love their sons, but they can't teach their son how to be an adult man. And I've also, with my connection with Girl Scouting, I saw a similar sort of thing, that the mothers could not teach their daughters how to live in harmony with a man.
It's more than that, though, if you think about it. Without a father who loves and teaches you to love and to respect yourself and to guard yourself because he's always there to back you. A girl doesn't understand that it's not up to her to prove that she's worthy of a guy. A guy has to prove, however he does it, that he is worthy of her. And that the favor of her simple smile, never mind anything else, not even a squeeze of the hand or a kiss on the cheek,
is mutual,
something that has to be earned.
Yes. And
girls these days especially don't get that. They think that they are competing with every other girl for the guy's attention. That's not true.
Well, what goes on, you know, is that you have to start out from the outset as parents, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Understanding that you're a team, right? Okay. And you cannot allow the kids to divide and conquer, which they will try to do, right? Okay. Right. Okay. Because when I see this to this day, my grandson comes in and said, you know, can we have Oreos? I said, did you ask your grandmother? Said, well, she said, no. Oh, and you want me to over? No, see, if grandma says grandma's in charge, and if she, so that the father, you know, is, you know, because there is usually a more something approaching, even in, you know, egalitarian, however egalitarian you may be in your ideals, there is usually something approaching a traditional division of labor between the parents, whereas the mother is doing the nurturing, you know, the father, you know, has to concentrate more on the breadwinning role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if the mother's working, that's just how it usually breaks out. And so reinforcing, you know, the father is the sort of the backup parent. Okay, that because, and by the way, and this is not something that, you know, is imposed by patriarchy. Women want to raise their own children. They don't want them farmed out to hired help, you know, in the public school system or after school care or whatever. There is a pleasure in raising your own children. And having the father there now allows the woman greater room to specialize as a child care provider.
We are a species that has evolved to reproduce in a particular way. And it doesn't matter how much somebody's opinion is about whether or not they like that or not.
Right.
That's what works in the real world. And there's all sorts of things that come out of that intact family, but part of it is how to interrelate with family members, with people outside the family, how to interact with society, how to even hold a job and work. And speaking of holding a job, Stacy does this for a living, folks, and because he does it for a living, he likes to encourage your support for what he does. Tell him about the yellow button, Stacy.
Yeah, folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, it's in three columns, and near the top of the center column, you will notice a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and, of course, to the podcast as well. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog,
Hoagwash.com, right there in the sidebar on the right, you'll see the icon of a tip jar. Click on that. You'll be taken off to my PayPal account where you can make a contribution to the support of the blog, and I'll be very thankful for it. Or you can click on that icon of a hat, and it will take you off to the Hoagwash store, where you can spend all sorts of nice money that I will enjoy having a cut of, on things that have some sort of connection to branding related to the blog. or you can use the Amazon shopping links you'll find at both our blogs, because we both participate in the Amazon Associates program, which is a program Amazon has that allows bloggers to link to shopping at Amazon and get a commission on the sale. You pay the same price, but the blogger gets some support. Good way to support your bloggers of your choice. But regardless, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please.
You know, that's our moment of shameless capitalism. We believe very strongly in capitalism at this site. That digression, we started off talking about Jennifer Jason Leigh and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Mm-hmm. And then we just had a wonderful conversation that about unwed birth rates and child rearing and social norms. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, see, that's one of the reasons why we do this. It's fun. And we let people listen in.
By the way, can I say one thing about Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Please.
My absolute favorite sequence is Spicoli in his room, high as a smoking pot, you know, getting ready to go out to party, whacks his head with a shoe saying, "You hear that? That's how empty my head is." And the history teacher walks into the bedroom.
Mr. Hand, yeah.
Mr. Hand.
Yeah,
and
by the way,
he says to Spicoli, "We're going to discuss, I'm going to give you a test on American history." And he puts him through it. And of course, we only see the very last bit where Spicoli is actually talking rationally about the ideals of American history. And Spicoli asks him at the end, "Do you do this every year?" And he says, "Yes." And he walks out. I loved that moment because I always thought that that was a really good teacher. And that moment confirmed it for me. Anyway, I know nobody else cares, but I like history. Go.
Well, one of the ideals of America that comes out of our history is our idea of free speech, the free press, and that sort of stuff. Free elections, all that good stuff. Glenn Kirshner is a former federal prosecutor, and he's launched a campaign to compel, and this is a quote, "every business in America," unquote, to take a pledge that, and this is another quote, "the 2020 presidential election was free and fair and produced accurate, reliable results."
No.
Well, based on the currently available evidence, I cannot, and on my blog, Hogwash, which is a business, make that pledge in any sort of good conscience. And even if the available evidence fully convinced me that the belief expressed by that pledge were 100% accurate, I wouldn't make it under duress.
Me neither. I will not comply.
Well, previous efforts by others to change the or control the editorial policy of my blog through harassment and intimidation have failed, and Mr. Kirshner should expect that he will fail as well. I ain't having it. But meanwhile, talking about making votes count, of course, a Speaker of the House thinks that she gets to count votes.
Oh, yes.
She's going to try to, there's an effort going to get
3M out.
Yeah, Marionette Miller Meeks.
I love it. She's 3M.
Yeah, right. But, well, she won by a 6-vote margin. By the way, J. Tarleton Loser, who was a Congress critter from the Nashville area back in the 50s, won one of his elections by a single vote. So there's prisoners out there. But, you know, I'm sure that you can quote Stalin for us on vote counting.
I certainly can. And this one is actually one of my all-time favorite quotes by Stalin. One second while I make sure it's up. I'm sorry, I'm going through this really quickly. Whoa, that was nasty. Sorry, here we go. I consider it completely unimportant who in the party will vote or how. But what is extraordinarily important is this. Who will count the votes and how?
And you can Josef see...
Josef Vissarionovich Stalin.
Yes. Well, you
know, he was a really freaking evil guy. Okay, come on.
Well, yes, but I think there must be some sort of, you know, San Francisco Bay Area used to have Russian colonization. You know,
back we did,
then. And there may just be some sort of radiation out of the soil into Mrs. Pelosi. But she
has, because if you look at if you actually know the Russian community that is centered around the Russian Orthodox Church out in the Sunset, these people are for the most part descendants of the former people, one way and another. They were either emigres at the time of the revolution, or they somehow or other got out after the revolution. They're former people. Mm-hmm. And to say that they are anti-communist, to say the word rabid anti-communist, to say rabid and associate it with anti-communist sort of underestimates these guys. Are like exorcists versus demons with regard to communism.
You're trying to convince me that none of them voted for Nancy Pelosi, but she actually made a statement. I've got a video of it over at Hogwash that you can see, where she has the prerogative of seating or not seating someone in the House.
No, she does not.
Well, she's flat out wrong. The Supreme Court's already ruled on that. Powell versus McCormick, which was a 1969 suit that Adam Clayton Powell won. Mm-hmm. Unless the House can show that the winner of an election doesn't meet one of the constitutional qualifications, like, mm-hmm. you know, like not being a resident of the state from that you're serving, or mm-hmm. not being 25 yet, something like, you know, one of those constitutional things, they have to seat the member. Now, once the member is seated, they can expel the member, mm-hmm. but that takes a 2/3 vote, according to the Constitution. And Pelosi doesn't have the supermajority. She needs to get rid of Miller Meeks. So I don't think that she's going to be very successful, but that doesn't mean that I don't expect that she's going to try some sort of arrogant overreach, because that's been on display all this session so far. And I think it's just going to be another example of their screwing up.
Yes.
But we should be getting used to the people in charge screwing up now.
Oh. An unmitigated record of failure for not even 2 months. It's horrifying.
Well, I mean, look at foreign policy. Biden administration threatened to impose sanctions against Germany and India.
Yeah, right.
Now, Germany's been a NATO ally for decades, and mm-hmm. India is a member of a alliance forming up, an informal alliance called the Quad, that includes mm-hmm. them, Australia, Japan, and us, that's coming into existence to try to constrain the Chinese aggression in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. So mm-hmm. what's happening with your mic there?
Me or Stacy?
Well, you. It sounds like.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to. I'm still trying desperately to figure out what's wrong with my earphones. Excuse me.
Well, it sounded like somebody was beating on your mic.
No, that's probably. I'm sorry. That's my fault. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Anyway, it seems that the Germans are on the verge of completing a natural gas pipeline mm-hmm. from Russia that will almost completely bypass the pipeline that flows through Ukraine for natural gas. And India is planning to purchase the Russian S-400 air defense system, which will greatly increase its ability to defend against Pakistani and Chinese aircraft. Now, you can make a reasonable argument that you could oppose both of those deals because they benefit the Russians. On the other hand, there's another common denominator between them because both of them have potential adverse effects for Biden family allies like Ukraine and China.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave that right there where it is. And I'll let Stacy talk about the president's press conference.
How many of you folks watched that?
I couldn't bring myself to do it. It was elder abuse.
I had it on. I have the TV on in my office, and I tried to watch it for a while, and after about 10 or 15 minutes, I said, okay, he can't go on much longer. I can't endure this, you know, because the way the TV sits in my office, it's sort of slightly behind my right ear. Okay. It's over on the right hand wall as I'm facing my computer. So I have to turn around to look at it if I want. Well, I said, okay, I'm going to go out and have a cigarette. Maybe by the time I get back, he'll be done. But he went on for an hour. Anyways, the lead post right now at this very moment at the top of theothermccain.com is Joe Biden's Potemkin press conference. And if you
Potemkin,
know who
was there Russian interference?
yeah. If it, some of you our Russian expert here can tell you about Potemkin villages. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, but anyways,
actually, or you can talk.
Potemkin put up a bunch of fake villages with happy villagers for Catherine the Great to see, to make sure that she thought her subjects were happy.
Well, but the other Potemkin reference, if you're a cinema buff, about propaganda would be to the Eisenstein film, the Battleship Potemkin.
It's a brilliant movie. It really is.
Oh, the scene with the Marines coming down the steps with their rifles is just amazing.
The scene that explains why they were so mad when they opened cans of food and there are maggots crawling in them. That's pretty disgusting and gives you instant sympathy with the very angry sailors.
Well, meanwhile, back at the blog. Yes. What Joe Biden did Thursday was a superficial simulacrum of an actual press conference, a performance stage managed as carefully as a Wagner opera, intended for the sole purpose of creating the illusion that the elderly fool is not yet completely senile. I just noticed a typo. I hate typos. I hate typos. Oh, death to the typos.
I know.
You can get to it after the podcast.
Yeah, I know. It just anyways, but White House aides supplied Biden with a photo guide to the reporters in the White House press corps, with certain reporters marked by numbers, apparently indicating the planned order of pre-screened questions. And Conrad Black says the whole occasion was a long prepared setup. And yet this is being praised in the media. Tucker Carlson did his opening monologue. I think it was on Thursday. You've heard the term pregnant pause. Joe Biden's pauses were third trimester quintuplets. These pauses were ready to burst. And I feature a video clip on here in which Biden was asked, and he said, so the best way to get something done, if you hold it near and dear to you that you like to be able to, well, anyway, we're going to get a lot done. And he just completely loses the thread in mid-sentence.
Yeah.
And it seems like to me that what they had done is that they had rehearsed scripted answers, and he just forgot his scripted lines and couldn't find his notes. And
it's getting
there.
Time to take away the keys.
Well, you know, Chris Wallace, who is not anti-Biden because he's certainly anti-Trump, but Chris Wallace was on Fox, and he said he has never seen a president with a briefing book the way in a press conference, the way that Biden was sitting there reading prepared statements out of a book. And it's like, what are you... You know, and but the worst thing he did was to say that Georgia's new recently passed voter election integrity law is worse than Jim Crow.
What does that say about his opinion about minorities and Democrat voters?
It's just like, are you kidding me?
You have to do is look at the way he handled things like the 1994 crime bills, and he is a racist with only one A, racist.
Well, you know, I don't like to accuse other people of racism, okay? Because that's not the question. The question is whether policy is effective. Okay, the thing, by the way, the 1994 crime bill is, you ask people who know, and they'll tell you this, it was the number one thing that hurt Democrats in the midterm elections in 1994 was that crime bill, because it had in it the assault weapons ban, and the NRA spent big in that election. And my Democratic congressman up until 94 was a mediocrity known as Weich Fowler. And Weich Fowler was the guy who lost the 7th District of Georgia to someone whose name I think might be familiar to you, Bob Barr. Okay, Bob Barr was the guy, and you know, most people outside of Marietta had never heard of Bob Barr, but they were going to vote against Weich Fowler because Weich Fowler voted for that gun grab bill. And I remember at the time, if you know anything about what a semi-automatic rifle is, you know that a semi-automatic rifle is not an assault weapon.
Well,
no,
first of all, it is not. First of all, there is, other than in poorly drafted state laws, there's no such thing as an assault weapon. Although Maryland state law does define what an assault pistol is.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you know, it's Maryland. What are you going to do?
Don't make my head ache.
But anyway.
But let me, you know, here's the thing. Biden is clearly, you know, not up to the job.
No.
Oh, God, no.
And if that was supposed to convince us that he is, they failed. On the other hand, if it's the setup for a 25th Amendment, piece of cake.
Well, you know, this week someone issued an order directive at the White House that henceforth – all communications are to refer to it as the Biden-Harris administration.
Oh, yes. All the paperwork I get now from the government agency that I work with the contractor refers to the administration, refers to the Biden-Harris administration.
And the thing is, as I was saying, I don't know how we got off on gun control there, but
because we're getting ready to go into gun control is the next topic.
Okay, but I wanted to say that Weich Fowler was interviewed after that election. He said the NRA was what that assault weapons ban was what did him in. And that was true.
And they're trying to peddle gun control again.
Yes, and they are.
Have they looked at the statistics of how many guns have been bought recently and by whom? Women and minorities are out there and they are buying weapons.
Right. And but the point is that They're saying one of the things we need to have is universal background checks. Well, guess what Colorado has? Guess what Colorado has? Right. Well, and of course, universal background check doesn't have anything to do with a purchase from a federally licensed dealer, because a federally licensed dealer who sells a firearm to anyone who doesn't have another FFL, federal firearms license, if you sell to a non-licensee, you have to run a background check through the national system, unless the person has, there are some states where the states have pre-background checked people and they give them
if they have a weapons carry license in Georgia.
You don't have to, because the background check for that is considered equal to or better than what NICS does. So that's, you know, the guy passed a background check, and there are now 10 dead at the hands of a devout Muslim immigrant from Syria who hates Trump and who was radicalized by mainstream media reporting.
Yeah.
Talk about a narrative fail.
Except you'll notice how quickly they spun to, oh, he was bullied. Oh, he was bullied for being a Muslim. Actually, it doesn't appear he was ever actually bullied for being a Muslim. It appears that he built that narrative himself.
Yeah. Well, Jason Crow is the Democrat congressman from Aurora, Colorado. And he tweeted, "I grew up a hunter and served as an Army Ranger. I didn't take my deer hunting rifle to Afghanistan, nor did I take my assault rifle," which is the correct term, by the way, "my assault rifle deer hunting. Don't be fooled by the gun lobby. The type of gun matters. Weapons of war have no place in our community." Oh, to which I replied, "One reason you shouldn't use an M4 or M16 deer hunting is that the 5.56 NATO cartridge is not allowed by most state fish and game agencies because it isn't powerful enough for humane use on deer."
Correct.
If weapons of war have no place on our streets, why is the Guard still in D.C.?
Yes. Oh, by the way, your tweet is no longer available.
Really?
Yep. Huh. Or at least I couldn't get to it. Of course, you can, because you're the owner of the tweet, but...
Yeah, sorry, that page doesn't exist is the link I get.
That's interesting. Well,
yeah, I was just trying it.
Well, someone else replied to him, I honestly don't think that one needs 30-plus rounds of 5.56 for home security. And I replied to guy, "Well, yes, I found that 15 rounds of 30 caliber carbine backed up by 5 rounds of 20 gauge number 4 buckshot will do. On the other hand, I do prefer 30 round magazines in my carbine."
Yeah. You know, this idea that there is let me put it to you this way. There are stereotypes involved here. Okay. That when Jason Crow, the Colorado Democrat, talks about weapons of war, who does he think he is talking about in terms of, if we're talking about people who perpetrate homicide?
Okay, I own an AR-15. It is in caliber 7.62 by 39.
Which is a
powerful enough cartridge for deer hunting, and I bought it as a deer hunting rifle for use in the woods. It's not a military weapon. It won't go full auto. I don't have any full auto military weapons. However, I do have a model 1911 45 caliber pistol. I do have an M1 carbine. I do have a 1903 Springfield rifle. Nice. I've also got an 1883 4570 trapdoor Springfield. Those are all military weapons of war, and not the well. They probably would get upset about the carbine these days. But still, you know, it's
the the thing is that Jason Crow and all these liberal media types who go on and on and on about assault weapons and you know, magazines and size and all of this stuff.
Well, you could make a case that no one needs one of these extended capacity magazines. I mean, can you justify someone? No, can you justify that somebody needs a 30-page copy of Mother Jones?
No. Nor can I say that somebody needs a jumbo can of Manwich makings. I mean, I'm sorry. All of this, the minute somebody starts talking about what you need, what nobody needs.
Nobody needs more than 10 pages. Nobody needs more than 10 pages of Time magazine.
Oh, yeah.
You see how it works. Go ahead, Stacey.
What I was saying is that there is this perception, right? Okay, that the weapons problem, as they see, they think about homicide. They're thinking about homicide as a weapons problem. Okay, and they're thinking about the weapons as a homicide problem. They're associating the weapons with the crime. But nope. But your rifle, my pistol, I don't know of a member of my family who doesn't own firearms. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you know what I'm saying?
None of the adults.
The grandkids are probably a little young, Stacey.
None of us has so far at least gone on a murder spree. Okay, yeah. So crime is a people problem. Okay, I asked you to write down the title of that book earlier, but if you're listening to this, write down that sentence. Crime is a people problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In other words, the problem is not the weapon. Okay. It is the criminal. Okay. The person who commits crime. Okay. And if you want to stop crime, you have to identify the perpetrators and effectively quarantine them from the population at large. Now,
Stacey.
There will always be these occasions when someone loses their temper or something else. But this guy, Ahmad al-Issa is his name. And people keep writing it as Alyssa, okay?
Yeah,
but he's a Syrian immigrant, Ahmad al-Issa. And as more details have come out about this, this guy had a history of mental illness. Okay. He had a history of crimes that did not include any felony convictions, but
Correct. This
guy was a known problem.
Yep. Okay?
He was a known problem. And yet he was able 6 days before the shooting spree, 6 days, he was able to pass a background check.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The only thing he'd ever been convicted of was a misdemeanor.
Right. And so people are talking about gun control, and they keep going back to this firearms ban, assault weapons ban of so-called of 1994. And we've talked about this. But this,
and when it expired, the crime rate went down.
Point being that when researchers looked at it and found that this law made no difference in the crime, in the rate of violent crime. Because, and why is this? I'll tell you why. Most gun homicides are committed with common pistols.
Yep.
Okay. In other words, you're 38. Your 9 millimeter, your 40 caliber, These ordinary pistols are the preferred weapon of criminals. Rifles of all kinds, not AR-15s, but rifles of all kinds. A tiny percentage.
You're more likely to be killed by someone's fist than by a rifle.
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct. The idea, but ever
well,
since...
Well, we could ban fist control. There we go.
Yeah, right. That's going to happen.
The thing I remember there's this great scene of All in the Family where Archie Bunker's having an argument with his meathead son-in-law who says, well, did you know that so-and-so percentage of people are killed with Saturday night specials? And he said, well, would you prefer that they were just out of windows? You know, that somehow this has become a political tool of people who won't, they just,
Saturday Night Special really was a racist term.
Right. But the idea that the weapon, the instrument, okay, is what we're going to focus on is where did this come from? And I'll tell you, hang on a second. I'll tell you exactly where it came from. Waco. Do you remember Waco?
Oh, no.
I do.
It's before Waco.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that assault weapons ban, okay, was the Democrats' reaction to Waco. Most of us who watched that Waco thing said, whoa, the government's out of control. This is crazy. They didn't have to do that, right? But to the Democrats, the problem was that they had all these weapons at the Waco Branch Davidian compound.
Well, actually, no. This is a place where California led the way. And California's in with the assault weapons ban back when
101 Cal. 101 yep. Cal. If you were I was working, oddly enough, on the 35th floor of a building on Market Street on the day that 101 Cal occurred, the shooting at 101 California, 35th floor. I got 5 calls. One from my mother, one from my brother, 3 from friends, saying, 35th floor, where the hell, you're on the 35th floor, are you there? This isn't you, right? And I'm like, relax, it's okay. 101 Cal, the way that the guy came in, the things that he did, the shooting that he did, led to Dianne Feinstein standing there going on and on and on about weapons of mass destruction. And next thing you know, California has passed a series of entirely ridiculous, contradictory bills telling you what your gun can look like, basically.
And the list of enumerated weapons from that became the basis of the Maryland and federal legislation that followed.
Correct. But Dianne Feinstein was an idiot on this point and remains an idiot.
Well, yeah. But she has never turned in either of her 38 special revolvers that she has.
Of course she hasn't.
But, you know... the problem with Feinstein
and
is
this was a guy, by the way, one of the reasons was that he targeted a law firm.
He did.
Okay. And lawyers, like, I don't know how many lawyer jokes, you know, but
there was a lawyer. Don't get me started.
Yeah. But you know, what do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean?
A start. Okay.
A good start, yeah.
No, a start. Not a good start, just a start.
And there's all kinds of jokes about lawyers.
In this case, we're dealing with a crazy guy.
Right.
Well, crazy people are dangerous.
Yes. Crazy people are dangerous, as we have often said. And
quite correctly, I might add.
Is that my cue?
That's your cue, Stacy.
Yeah. Okay, so we've gotten through the entire agenda?
Well, except for the crazy person that you wrote about.
No, okay. All right, folks.
Now, calling her crazy and calling her a tumbalina is
Redundant. Yeah, I had a post that I put up this morning. By the way, I had a couple of days where I didn't post anything, and I just got lost. I went down one of those internet rabbit holes. But anyways, what I came back with was this little thing. A Tumblrina. A Tumblrina is a slang for someone on the website, the blogging platform Tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. That when I started blogging about radical feminism, Tumblr was a place to go see the animal in its native habitat. There's a lot of crazy feminists on Tumblr, but I repeat myself. Anyways, but. But I found this one post with over 20,000 notes, and notes are what they call likes and reblogs. And it is the reblog function that make Tumblr the cesspool of craziness that it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let me quote this. I hate men as much as anyone else, but it's really annoying that bi women have to like constantly downplay their attraction to men to be taken seriously in the LGBT community, and God forbid be in a relationship with one. Annoying. Okay. Now I quote that directly, but what she's trying to say is that, and this is what the phrase that they use, the bisexual activists, and they're always women, by the way. You never hear a bisexual man, right, on this platform, okay? If you do, they're not in the discourse. This discourse is strictly within the queer women. Oh, what is this? Hush! Hush! You hush. You crazy dog. Having to deal with dogs barking. Okay. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, but what it is, this bisexual erasure, as they call it, is where that if a bisexual woman is in a relationship with a man, she's made to feel not part of the LGBT community, and not being part of the community, that's oppression, apparently. Oh,
for God's sake.
And I'm like, why is it so important to you, right, to be taken seriously by the LGBT community? What do you want to be taken seriously about? About how you're a victim? What are you a victim of? Oh, exactly. People within the community who don't think you belong in their community, you silly bisexual women. Which, by the way, and let me buy it. A lot of women who call themselves bisexual, that is strictly a hypothetical. In other words, they are not actually actively in any relationships with women, not seeking relationships with women. But if you look at the statistics, and there was some recent, I think Rod Dreher wrote about it, is this Gallup poll. Shows this remarkable increase, right, in people identifying as LGBTQ, whatever. But LGBT, most of this is women identifying as bisexual, even though most of them are in heterosexual relationships or no relationship at all. That bisexual in such a case is merely a word for desperate. But crazy people are dangerous, and I got around to some of this on there, including a woman, alleged woman named Amy Chalinor. But folks, I hear the boogie woogie in the background. It tells me it's about time for us to get off the air. Yeah, so 7 o'clock Saturday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. It's the time, and we will be back here with the other podcast.
Thanks for joining us, Diana.
And we'll talk to you later.
Good night, folks. Well, now they call me the freak. I keep going down the road.
Mr. Breeze.